Coming at you from the center of the universe, Toronto, Canada, this is The Recency Bias. I'm Zach Vanoss, managing editor of rabbithabs.com, along with you here for our mini podcast, post-game, morning after, however you want to qualify it. It was a good one, but a late one for your Montreal Canadiens. On Tuesday night, head into Vancouver, take on the Vancouver Canucks, who have had a very similar season, albeit the narrative has probably been quite different for the Canucks. When you look at their record, when you compare the stats between these two teams, relatively comparable. Of course, as I say, game gets off to a 10 o'clock start, a little later than usual, that's for sure, which I love because it was one of the more fun nights in the NHL. There was a lot of great storylines going on. If you listen to one of the more recent, or no, the most recent episode of the Montreal Bias, the big show with Sean and myself, you heard me talking and complaining about the NHL and how boring of a season I felt it's been this year. But Tuesday night was a pretty fun night in the NHL overall. There was also a great NBA game on. Giannis Antetokounmpo going up against LeBron James. That was awesome to watch as well. So I was glad for the 10 o'clock start, which is a rare thing. But, you know, getting in the holiday season, stay up a little late. This one ending just before 1 a.m., so it was a late one. But it wasn't that difficult to stay up if you made the decision to stay up, because a lot happened in this thing. Of course, in the early going, hey, it's the Montreal Canadiens, so they have to get down first. That's the rule. Required to let the opposition get one ahead of you. The power play goal from, hey, why not? This is a season for rubbing salt in wounds, isn't it? Let's get Thomas Vanek a goal, his eighth of the season. And Vancouver's up on Montreal, 1-0 in the early going. It's a good pace, though. First period does feel like a good pace. You're watching a good game right at the bat. Not that long later, Schlemko throws one on net on the Habs power play. And Daniel Carr gets his third of the season. He's got 9 points in 8 games since being called up for the Habs. Of course, one of the other main takeaways from that first period, I think, is Max Pacioretty getting shafted. Absolutely robbed. The guy's trying to find his way out of one of the more significant slumps of his NHL career now at this point, and just robbed what will end up being one of the saves for the season by old Anders Nielsen. And so after one, you know, we've seen good pace, we've seen exchange of goals. In the second period, 7+ minutes actually go by before anybody gets going, which, you know, when you look at the final result of this game, 7-5 score, you're midway through the game and it's still even at 1 apiece. So as the hours are getting later, as you're getting more tired, the action about to pick up. It is the Canadians who take the lead in that second period. Jeff Petrie doing some great work. Absolutely fantastic work. Takes it basically, little dance, little doodle. Gets it over to Fraze, who a beauty feed to Delorier? Okay, sure. And Habs are up 2-1 on Delorier's second of the season. One of the questions that I was riding the eggnog and riding the Montreal Bias Twitter account last night, at the Montreal Bias, and I was going to tweet kind of jokingly, which are kind of the only tweets that come from that account, are somewhat sarcastic. It was basically going to be like, ooh, let's get it going. Is Jeff Petrie better without Shea Weber? And then minutes later, you got real legits, as I like to call them, the legits. You got guys like Brian Wilde, Eric Engels. I see popping the question. Arpin Basu, I think, threw it out there. Is Petrie raising his game when Weber's not there? If so, is that a good or bad thing? I'm not really sure. But Petrie has had all his best games this season have been when Shea Weber's not there. That's all I know. Could be coincidence. Might be something to it. But he was great with some shake and bake on that second goal for the Habs. And then, because why not, Thomas Vanek gets his second of the night. And suddenly we're all even at 2. Then, Delorier with another. And a great celebration, celebrating his second goal of the night, third of the season. Delorier's been solid. Let's say that much. I think he's perhaps, between him and Brian Frey, has been getting a little too much ice time for my liking, but head coaches more often than not have that soft spot for the fourth liners. And you know, this is a bit of a digression, but I've been thinking about this lately simply because, you know, we're frustrated with Terrier and his allocation of minutes so often. We're frustrated a little bit, I think, now with Claude Julien and seeing guys like Delorier and Frey's getting a lot more minutes than, say, Alex Galchenyuk on any given night. And, you know, and living in Toronto as I do, you inevitably end up paying attention to the Toronto Maple Leafs a little bit, and you hear how they're complaining about, you know, as great as their season's going, if they've got one complaint about McBubcook, that it's, you know, minute allocation and why using this guy in this role. And there's a tendency, and I wrote about this a little bit in the forum on rabbithabs.com over the weekend. Check that out. We got talking about evaluating Claude Julien today. And I basically was saying, you know, that's one of the things that we pick apart coaches for the most is how they use their players, time allocated, where they play them, in what situations they play them. One, because that's about all we can tell, you know what I mean? From the outside, what else are you really going to pick up on? You know, demeanor behind the bench, the way they talk to the press, sure, those things are all something. But the reality is we don't see, 95% of what a coach actually probably does, if we have any understanding of what they're doing, especially for those of us who've never played the game, to really understand the value of a coach. And so there's I do have an understanding of they recognize, you know, night for night is one thing, but they're going to reward the guys who are doing the things they're being told to do. That's always likely going to be the case. I mean, playoffs, maybe that changes. In games that are absolutely must wins, sometimes you might see that change. Sometimes you won't. And I think you what we're seeing in the case of Delorier and Frey's getting more ice time than you want, or, you know, back to the days of David Dale, the list goes on and on, and it applies to probably every team in the NHL. And sometimes I think that's just the fact that, you know, these fourth liners, these third liners, they're the ones going out and doing what the coach is telling them to. They're executing their game. Now, it might not be a standout. The rewards are likely to be less. But what are you, you know, I put myself in the coach's shoes a little bit. What are you supposed to do? Keep putting the guys out there who maybe aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, who are missing the mark for what they're expected to achieve, what they're being asked to do, or is it maybe the third, fourth liners, those grinder guys, they often get maybe an oversized reputation because they do what the coach wants them to. It might not, in the end, be as effective, but they're, you know, it does look like Julien rewards those who are probably executing the plan. And that kind of makes sense. Anyways, that was a digression, but it's just something I've been thinking about lately when it came to, when it comes to how coaches choose the players. And you can agree or disagree with that. That's a different argument to be had. But I was trying to understand why, no matter what market, these third and fourth and these grinders seem to be trusted or used more often than the fan base would like them to. So anyway, all that to say, hey, Delorier gets his third of the season, second of the night. Awesome celebration. He celebrates big when he gets him. But hey, 34 seconds later, here comes a reply. And now we're knotted at 3. As Daniel Sedin gets his 7th of the season. But before the period is out, Jeff Petrie decides a little bit more of a Shea Weber impression is necessary. 3 seconds into the power play, and he slams one home, and the Habs are up 4-3 after 40 minutes of play. And you know you got a wild one the rest of the way. And what's crazy in this game, and this especially pertains to the third period, was this is a night that Carey Price allowed 5 goals. Very rarely, if ever, can you say Carey Price has a good game in a night in which he allowed 5 goals. Did so on 39 shots. You know, that's like it's an .872 save percentage on the night. That's horrible, hypothetically. But Carey Price was somehow really good in this game. Yes, he allowed 5, but he made some great saves, and he was in it He was solid. Sometimes the stat sheet doesn't reflect what was actually out there. Sometimes it does, but that was not the case against the Canucks on Tuesday. So, Habs take a 4-3 lead into the third. And just a minute 37 into the third, Paul Byron does his thing, puts the Habs up 5-3. Now you're starting to feel, okay, this game's safe. The win has been established. You got that two-goal cushion. We'll ride this out the rest of the way. But no, the game had other things in mind. First off, Brock Boeser, who's been a revelation, made it interesting. He posted it to 5-4. And then for good measure, Alex Galchenyuk with some nifty moves. The kind of thing you love to see from Alex Galchenyuk. You know, there's, what, 3 minutes left to play in the game? He scores his eighth. All right, Habs back up. Well, no, let's pull the goalie on the part of Vancouver. Thomas Vanek, the former short-time Hab, gets the hat trick. There's still a minute to play. The game is 6-5 at this point. And hey, for good measure, with 11 seconds to go, Max Pacioretty, I think, could have had one for himself. I mean, he was in a bit of a battle going back towards that empty net, but got the sense he didn't want the empty netter. He gets it off to Phil Deneau. Deneau gets his seventh of the year. 7-5, the final score. It was a really, really fun Habs game. Other crazy action in the NHL on Tuesday. Things are going early in the afternoon as Toronto and Carolina collided in Toronto. 8-1, the score in that one. Maple Leafs doing a lot of damage to the Hurricanes in that one. Never even close. Detroit doubling up on the New York Islanders 6-3. The New York Rangers beat the Anaheim Ducks 4-1. Minnesota Wild beat the Ottawa Senators 6-4. Senators led that game 3-1 at a point. Erik Karlsson looked fantastic and you know, kind of game that coming off the two wins that the Sens had just come off of, including obviously that outdoor 3-0 win in a snooze fest over the Habs. But then this one kind of fell off on them. Just as Senators might look like they were trying to get things back on track. Real shame. Boston, they shut out Buffalo 3-0. That team keeps rolling. Winnipeg and Nashville, this was a hell of a game. If you weren't watching this one, you missed a great one. As entertaining as 7-5 between Montreal and Vancouver may have been, Winnipeg-Nashville, those are two solid teams. Maybe two of the five best teams in the NHL right now. Winnipeg wins that one, I'd say 6-4. Flurry of goals in the middle. It's just watching two real solid heavyweight teams go to work. Had a lot of fun with that one. Washington beats Dallas 4-3 in overtime. Florida edges Arizona 3-2. And Vegas, baby! They beat Tampa 4-3. And now one of the best records in the entire NHL. Let me check these standings real quick here. They now find themselves in first in the West, 22-9-2. Practically undefeated at home and 500 essentially on the road. What's that about? Why would teams going into Las Vegas be struggling? So Vegas getting that Montreal bump from the 50s, 60s, 70s when teams would come to town and party too hard and not be ready. Might be what the wind in the sails of the Vegas Golden Knights at the moment. But still, fun. They beat Tampa. Kind of an ugly goal for the game, Ned, but it was a good one to watch as well. Like I said, great night in the NHL. In a season that I found regularly kind of dull. That West shaping up, if you're wondering what the top of that looks like, it's Vegas, Nashville, St. Louis, LA, and Winnipeg are 1-5. And, you know, only 1 point separating them at this point. So, going to be a good race. Fun teams. Tough out there in the West. East. Washington's playing well right now. Tampa's obviously a juggernaut. I think you got to give credit to the Maple Leafs at this point, but it's not, I don't know, it's not a murderer's row, I don't think. But that being said, at 15-15-4, faux 500, as I like to call it, your Montreal Canadiens are 5 points out of that last spot in the Atlantic, have played two more games than the Boston Bruins, who they're chasing. the Detroit Red Wings, who I was calling dead and remain, you know, I still think they're dead. I have not changed their status. They're only 1 point behind the Habs, so I don't think the Canadians are making the playoffs, is my point. So enjoy games like Tuesday night. That was fun. And that's what, you know, that's the kind of stuff you got to ride this season. Might not be fun here. I don't know. We're just, we're too near to Christmas. The Canadians have not showed enough. Shea Weber going around with a walking boot on was maybe sent back to Montreal, then apparently not. I didn't really follow that storyline. All I cared about, I don't care where he is geographically. If it ain't on the ice, it's a problem. Jeff Petrie can't replace Shea Weber every night, as much as we'd like that to be the case. So that's it. No action till Friday night now for the Canadians. They'll head to Cowtown, a 9 o'clock puck drop against the Flames in that one. Till then, you can find me on Twitter at ZachDropsTweets. Already mentioned the Montreal Bias account at the Montreal Bias. Of course, at Rabbit Habs at Rabbit Habs. We had a new edition of the forum up on that on the weekend. As I mentioned, talking about Claude Julien. Check that out. Check out Ian Boisvert's game recaps. Lots of good opinion pieces coming at you this week as well from our contributors. So get on over there, rabbithabs.com. Until the next edition of the Recency Bias, take care.